Welcome back to the Unplayable Podcast. Australia has just won its second match of the T20 World Cup, defeating Sri Lanka by 7 wickets with 18 balls to spare. My name is Josh Schoenfinger, and it's a very good morning to Louis Cameron. Hello, Louis.
Hello, Josh. How are you going? We're a long way. It feels like a long way from Dubai here in Melbourne. We're cold and wet and pretty miserable, and it's pretty much the opposite of that. It's not miserable. It's dry and it's hot over in Dubai, where Australia have, as you said, won that game with some ease in the end, although they were really tested at different points in that game.
They certainly were. Sri Lanka got off to a flying start, really came out of the blocks hard, and it was Charith Asalanka, who probably a lot of us hadn't heard of before, but made a real impression and took the attack to the Aussie bowlers at the start.
He was absolutely fantastic to watch, Josh. I thought when Australia got their first wicket through Cummins and Pathum Nisanka was on his way quite early on, I thought, you know, here we go. They might really struggle with the pace. But Asalanka was brilliant. He absolutely electrified the game, I thought. I mean, he took 19 of his first 6 legal deliveries. One of them was a no ball, which was the first ball he faced off Pat Cummins that he pulled to the square leg boundary. He then dispatched the next one with a kind of check drive over mid off. It was really amazing to watch, and they were absolutely flying. They were 1 for 78. Just having a look here at the fall of wickets in the 10th over before Zampa and Stark really put the brakes on. It was just electrifying batting from the Sri Lankans early.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of Charith Asalanka before, that's probably fair enough. He'd only played one T20 for Sri Lanka before this tournament, and then leading into the Super 12s, he'd scored 5, 6 and 8. So hardly setting the world on fire, and then he got 80 not out against Bangladesh, and he took that form into this match. And as you said, some of those shots off Pat Cummins were electrifying, and a massive 6 off Glenn Maxwell the following over.
Yeah, and around the halfway mark of that Sri Lankan innings, it looked like there were some issues kind of starting to appear in Australia's bowling plan. Maxwell was brought on early in the power play, and he had great success against South Africa. He basically got hit out of the attack. He went for 16 off his first and only over, 15 off his first 3 balls, so he did well to rein it back a little bit. But it meant Stoinis had to bowl the makeup of those overs, and he actually went for quite a few at the end too. So we'll touch a little bit on that later. But at that point, it really did look like it was all going Sri Lanka's way. It took some fantastic bowling, firstly from Adam Zampa and then from Mitchell Stark to kind of change the narrative there.
Yeah, you're right. Adam Zampa was eventually awarded player of the match. He took 2 for 12 off his 4 overs and had 12 dot balls. So he only went for dots, singles or a wicket. It was a pretty incredible performance when everyone else was sort of getting tapped at that point.
He did. Dale Steyn wants to invest in his Byron Bay property as well, I noticed, he said on the broadcast. Dale Steyn looking great in a Panama hat. He looked like he might fit in Byron Bay the way he was dressed tonight. The most interesting part about Zampa, 12 runs came off his 24 balls. 12 of them were singles. They didn't score anything. They didn't even score a boundary. They didn't score a 2. It was really fascinating bowling. The wrong-uns in particular were a real feature, and he got, I think, both his wickets were wrong-uns, but particular Asalanka, the one that the Aussies got just before the strategic timeout. Is it called a strategic timeout?
I think that's what we're going with,
sure. Yeah, a lot of strategy involved in it.
And that's a good point you made, though, because Australia brought on Maxwell because there were 2 left-handers at the crease. That didn't work, so they had to bring on Zampa, even though there were 2 lefties. And as you said, his wrong-uns were landing. He was bowling beautifully, and in the end, it didn't matter if they were left or right. Zampa, they couldn't hit him out of the attack.
Exactly right. And over after that, Stark, after getting absolutely monstered for an enormous 6 by Kusal Pereira, who looked to be picking up where Asalanka was had kind of left off, he bowled him with this fantastic Yorker. If you haven't seen it yet, I encourage listeners to take a look online and to wherever you get your highlights from. It was just an unreal ball. It kind of had shades of that Ben Stokes ball at the 2019 World Cup. That's what we were talking about, Josh, wasn't it?
Oh, beautifully. What a great response from Stark. That is superb. Just what you want.
Amazing.
Almost a carbon copy. I mean, probably didn't swing as much as the Stokes ball did, but it had the same sort of impact, the defeated look on the batter's face after the stumps were shattered. It was quite remarkable.
100%. We didn't quite get Kusal Pereira kicking his bat across the stumps. I'll never forget that image. But What it did do was Zampa and Stark taking 4 for 16 off 16 balls through those middle overs. It took some really good batting from Banuka Rajapaksa. I think I've got that one right. Done him justice. He batted beautifully to kind of get them back. And that's where I thought some of the cracks reappeared a little in terms of Stoinis went for 17 off his last over. He was having to bowl more because Maxwell had obviously been hit out of the attack. And then it actually meant Josh Hazlewood had to bowl the last over of the innings, which is something he doesn't do too often. I don't think he did it too much for Chennai in the recent IPL. He did a really good job, but you know whether that's sustainable going forward against England, can't wait to see that coming up this Saturday.
Hopefully for Australia's sake it is. It just gives them more options at the death, doesn't it? But you touched on the part-timers. Well, we can't call them part-timers. Stoinis and Maxwell are more than that.
Definitely, yeah.
But Justin Langer said before the game that he expected the scores in this tournament to be a lot lower than normal 2020 matches, and so Australia were going to go batter-heavy with their selection. Are they maybe going to have to rethink that strategy after Stoinis and Maxwell sort of showed a few cracks there?
And I wouldn't even – I might have said cracks before. Maybe cracks is maybe the wrong way of putting it because we shouldn't forget Maxwell bowled beautifully in that first game against South Africa. His figures were very good. And, you know, we might well get some, you know, spinning wickets for this game against England. So – It would be a consideration, though, I think, for Langer and the selectors, whether they want to bring in the extra bowler. It's probably Ashnagar, isn't it?
Yeah.
That gives you an extra kind of match-up option with the left-arm spin.
Mitch Marsh, is he bowling at the minute? What's his story?
Yeah, well, he did. He did in the warm-up games, and he is bowling. So it's another option, but it's probably similar to Stoinis, and I think they just see Stoinis as maybe a fraction ahead of him at the moment.
Okay.
You could, I mean, we're going to touch on the batting now, but the batting is looking so confident at the minute that you might almost consider playing an extra bowler.
Well, we didn't think we'd be saying that maybe 2 weeks ago before that, but the middle order's firing. Stoinis hit the winning runs for the second game in a row, and the top order, which hadn't been in the runs, well, today they were.
50 up and a fine half century for David Warner.
David Warner was electric, really. He was fantastic to watch. His pull shots in particular, he seemed to rock back really well. He kind of found the fluency that he says he hasn't missed. He says he hasn't been out of form, but he just hasn't been at the crease for a long period of time. Even when he did, going back to the first part of the IPL, his IPL team, Sunrisers Hyderabad, dropped him because he wasn't scoring quick enough. So there's clearly some stuff for him to work through, I suppose, even if he wasn't out of form. And he looks fantastic. And him and Finch, gee, they were just back to their best, weren't they?
They certainly were. Warner said that he'd been practicing on concrete pitches. Is that something that you've heard of before? Is that a common thing for batters to do?
I haven't heard many Australians doing it. I reckon I've heard of I reckon even the Sri Lankans might have done it, maybe the Pakistanis. I've heard of them doing it when they prepare to come out to Australia, because the wickets are so, or in the past have been very foreign to them in terms of the pace and bounce, so they'll kind of get on the polished concrete and get balls skidding onto the bat. But Warner's basically said that it's due to the tiredness of the practice wickets over there, which is understandable given that they've had the Indian Premier League and that's been running for quite a while. So I guess he's saying there's a disparity between the speed of the practice wickets and the speed of the actual wickets that they're playing on.
Well, the Dubai wicket tonight was pretty good, I thought, and they scored 154 Sri Lanka in their first innings. Australia got there, as I said, with three overs to spare. The crucial moment in Australia's innings perhaps was a dropped catch. Warner was put down by the keeper, Kusal Pereira, on 18, and as the match panned out, that turned out to be pretty crucial.
It was fascinating seeing the reverse angle of this. You pointed it out to me. Can you describe what kind of transpired with that?
Well, it's ballooned off Warner's glove, and so it's looking like a pretty straightforward catch for Pereira, and the bowler's gone up to celebrate because it's heading for his gloves, but it missed his gloves altogether, fell to the ground, and even the umpire was in the motion of putting up his finger.
He had his finger up. He had it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that happens a lot because we don't see the umpires all the time, but his finger was ready to trigger, and then all of a sudden he had to put that back away because the catch has dropped.
It was almost the itchy nose one. Yes, slightly different circumstances, but BBL fans would know what we're talking about. If you know, you know.
We're all BBL fans.
And Warner, it's just an amazing record that he's got against Sri Lanka. They'll be having nightmares about him. So he made 100 not out, 60 not out, 57 not out when they were out in Australia 2 years ago. He added to that 65 today. So he's one for 282 off his last 189 balls against Sri Lanka.
Yeah, very solid, very solid.
Yeah, I would. And some of the shots tonight, I mean, he nearly cleaned up. Was it Chimera? No, it was Kumara who he absolutely launched a drive back at. So Warner was really impressive. The other one I thought was Aaron Finch. 37 of 23. He looked disappointed to get out to Hasaranga, who kind of hamstrung the Aussies through the middle there a little bit. But one of the things I thought that was interesting that Warner said in his press conference the other day was that he kind of got asked, oh, is a big score around the corner. He said, yeah, I feel like it's not far off, but the most important thing is not necessarily a big score, but it's kind of how maybe I'm paraphrasing a bit, but how quickly you get it and how do you contribute to it, to a big total and team. And he kind of said, if everyone makes 30 off 20 balls, you know, the top six does that, you'll make 180 in no time. So, I think from that point of view, Finch would have been really happy to have done what he did.
It's a good point you make about that because Warner is always going to play that same way. And I thought one of the things that really stood out to me was the third ball he faced was off the mystery spinner, Mahesh Thikshana.
There's no mystery spinners according to David, though.
Well, that's right. And we hadn't seen him and Warner hasn't faced him. And then the second ball that he's faced off the spinner, he's gone for the switch hit and he's hit it over what would be his third man, which turned into sort of his fine leg. And that sort of set the intent, I think, for Warner because he's always going to come out and play positively. He's not someone who's going to try and take his time to find the middle of the bat and find that form. He really played his game that was take on the bowler and don't let them settle.
Big time, yeah. And, I mean, it does probably show that if you're playing reverse sweeps and stuff like that early, it probably means you're not necessarily pick him. I remember Moses Henrique said something great about how when you play the sweep shot, you're trying to convince the bowler that you know exactly which way it's turning when in reality, if you're playing it, you're not picking it. But yeah, Warner's fantastic. Finch was a little, there are a few little shouts early, hit his pads and he got beaten on his inside edge from Karuna Ratna, who bowled a really good first over actually. But he got going and he was fantastic. And then, the middle order, it's looking solid. Maxwell didn't get any tonight, but that's okay, I suppose, given he's in good form. Steve Smith anchored it well and Stoinis finished off the job with 16 off 7 balls.
Marsh was dropped down to number 6 while he didn't bat. Would that be because the Australian openers went through the power play without losing a wicket, or was that just a situational thing? Why do you think he was dropped down the order?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I presume that's exactly why, is that they've kind of earmarked Maxwell, as he probably did in the IPL for RCB, was any time a wicket falls off. Yeah, if you lose your first wicket after the power play, that's when he comes in. I think that works really well. And Marsh is adaptable enough. Remember, that was his role, batting, 5, 6, 7 in the Aussie limited overs teams. And he's done it quite well for the Perth Scorchers, even just this last big bash. So it's good having someone who's pretty flexible there. It's weird that we're in this position that we kind of got a few guys who it just looks like the middle order knows what their roles are.
Stream in his batting, very full on and in its way unusual. Stoinis again, in a way that's even better. Cracking stroke, and it takes Australia to a very impressive victory. If we said they weren't convincing against South Africa...
So looking ahead to England, Josh, they've got less than 48 hours' time before that game starts. They're playing it in Dubai again. It's going to be a different wicket, Dave Warner said in his press conference. I think he said it might have been closer to the other side. Looked like there was one short boundary, square boundary today, and that might be rectified somewhat when they play England. So, I still think the biggest question is over whether they need a specialist fifth bowler. That's what Langer has preferred his whole T20 coaching career. That's probably the only real question for an Aussie team if we're nitpicking.
This is going to be the big test for Australia, isn't it? I mean, most of us casual observers would have said that they should beat South Africa and they should beat Sri Lanka, but England have been really hot this tournament. They've blown away the West Indies and then they brushed aside Bangladesh. This is going to be a fascinating contest because nobody probably expected Australia to have this form, but England, this is the form that everyone expected of them. And yeah, it's going to be a cracking contest.
Yeah, it really will be. And I think the interesting part of it is England haven't really been tested yet. They coasted against West Indies. They bowled them at 55. I know they lost a few wickets, but that was never in doubt. And then Bangladesh, they did even easier. They chased down 120, I think, for the loss of two wickets.
Yep.
Australia, on the other hand, their batters were tested against South Africa. And I think their bowlers were tested here against Sri Lanka. Both times they kind of came through, that, you know, some guys who got put under pressure showed a bit. But they've probably faced a bit more heat so far. So whether that could be a positive from Australia's point of view, and that they know they've been tested. England, you know, to say they're untested would be false, would be wrong, and they've got a lot of experience in this format. But they also do have some new faces to, you know, to not to international cricket necessarily, but to that particular team. But it's funny, they've changed their team a little bit, you know, on the eve of the tournament. But Chris Wokes is all of a sudden playing a really key role up front with the ball. Tamil Mills hasn't always been part of that T20 setup in recent times. And Liam Livingstone has kind of been shoehorned into the middle order. And we know what a good player he is from the Big Bash. But, you know, it's not like it's – yeah, I wouldn't say England have shown that they're infallible yet.
Okay. So there is hope for Australia after all.
Oh, I think England would definitely go into it as favourites and, you know, should probably behind – India and Pakistan at the moment be one of the favourites for the competition, with my tip, West Indies, flaming out pretty badly in their first two games. We might have to go back and scrub that from the record. But, England will go into it as favourites, and I think the Australians will probably like it that way.
Well, that's a pretty good way to wrap it up, I think, Louis. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the wrap-up for the Unplayable podcast, and we'll catch you again after Australia's match with England in 2 days' time.